This is Golf Talk Canada, Canada's only nationally syndicated golf talk radio and television program. Presented by Acura. Precision, crafted performance. Visit Acura.ca for our latest lineup, special offers, and dealer incentives. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Sacchino and Bob Weeks.
Good morning, Canada. Well, it's that time of year where we break down the year that was. It is our year in review special, one of many parts that you'll be hearing over the winter here on Golf Talk Canada across the TSN radio network. Myself, of course, with always Mr. Bob Weeks and Adam Scully joining our year in review roundtable. Before we jump into this, because over our year in review specials, we'll be talking about obviously performances of the years, tournament of the year, letdowns, disappointments, cup half full, surprises, everything and anything in the world of golf. We'll talk some Canadiana. But Bob, when we look back at 2017 and just take a snapshot in your mind, what pops out? Is there a theme? Is there a tone? Is there something where you go, yeah, 2017 was the year of blank?
I think on the PGA Tour, it was probably the year of guys who were hot for periods of time. Like you start of the year, we had Hideki Matsuyama coming off a tremendous November and December. We had Dustin Johnson running the table before he got injured at Augusta National. You had Justin Thomas at the start and the end of the year doing some amazing things. Nobody was able to sustain it for the entire year, which is something, of course, we probably haven't seen since the days of Tiger Woods. But that, to me, was certainly from the PGA standpoint. And then if you look at the rest of the world of golf, I mean, I think there were a number of themes. One, rules played a big part in many different ways.
The last few years,
yeah,
isn't
the LPGA Tour. Now we've got also the introduction of some new rules coming in that we know about. So there were a number of different things over the course of the year that I think you could see it say sort of weave themselves through from January to December.
Yeah, for me, the first half of the year, Skull, for me, is Team Canada swinging hard. Yep. I don't know if that's a theme for the whole year. I know you and I have talked many times, Bob, about what a great year for Canadian golf on all tours it was, et cetera, and I'm sure that's something we'll talk about in our upcoming specials in this year in review wrap. But if you look at the first handful of months of the season, Mack Hughes winning, Adam Hadwin with the 59, and then the win at the Valspar. Team Canada out of the blocks, like with knockout blows. And unfortunately, although they got a ton of experience and got to play major championship golf over the summer, and of course, Hadwin with the nice cherry on top at the end of the President's Cup, which I thought was great. It was unfortunate because I thought we were heading for maybe a third and fourth win even. We got the two. We got the 59. It was fun for you, Skull. Before we get into our first award here, so to speak, on the year in review, is there a theme, a tone, when you look back that leaps out at you?
Well, as Bob said, it was sort of the year of the streak, if you will. I mean, Justin Thomas really coming out of the gate in Hawaii, coming out the way he did, Dustin Johnson with his three straight wins. And then, as you said, with Team Canada having Adam Hadwin, yes, he won. Yes, he actually almost won at Bay Hill when he hit the flagstick on, I believe it was the 16th hole. He almost got a hole in one on the Sunday of the final round. He sort of fizzled out a little bit, so to speak, in the middle of the year. But then you look at Brooke Henderson for Team Canada. You know, another two win season. Just unbelievable to think that she's 20 years old and second all time in LPGA Tour wins as a Canadian, which is just remarkable. But yeah, I'd say it was the year of the streak and the year of Team Canada really shining.
I want to get back to that year of the streak because I have a question for you guys that I'll throw out there later this morning on the show. I think I have the answer that you're going to give me already. But before we get to that, there's lots to get to today. They're going to be doing comeback player of the year, letdown of the year, tournament of the year, Canadian golf story of the year. And of course, we'll talk Tiger, which recently broke that he is back. And we have Chris Angel Mind Freak with us today, Bob, otherwise known as Adam Scully, who predicted that he would return at the Hero World Challenge, which I think is absolutely insane. We will get to that later. But let's start with performance of the year. Now, we left this very vague because this could be a four-day performance. Mm-hmm. This could be a one-round performance. It could be a match, a team performance, if we're talking, what maybe a twosome did in the President's Cup, et cetera. So it was wide open. We'll start with you, Bob. For you, just if you're handing out the hardware, performance of the year, not only what is your performance, but how did you come about it? Why did you go down the path you chose?
So I decided that I would limit it to one round, a single round, because I thought that was kind of a microcosm of what we wanted to put together here, was just sort of, this is a great day for this guy. This was a great performance. And I think there were better choices in that category, if you limited it to just one round as opposed to a tournament performance. And the two that stood out for me, you know, at first I thought about Brandon Grace's 62, but I threw that out the window, and I'll get into that in another show because we're going to talk about kind of overrated things at one point here. But I think the two that stood out for me were Hideki Matsuyama shooting 61 at the Bridgestone, which I thought was just a remarkable performance. And it wasn't even so much the number that he shot, but coming down the stretch, how many times he hit it to like kick in distance.
Which Hideki has to do to shoot 61, because he ain't going to make 30 footers.
And
right?
he was bombing it off the tee. He was hitting it like 350 on the Pro Tracer on a straight arrow, which is crazy.
Yeah. I mean, that was as good as a round as I think I saw this year, even though it just tied the course record set by Tiger Woods, which coincidentally, Hideki was playing with Tiger the day he set that record of 61, which is kind of interesting. And then the other one, of course, is Adam Hadwin's 59. You know, I thought that that was obviously we're biased because it's a great performance, but a par 72 course to shoot 59 on was an amazing thing to watch. And I guess it's one of those ones where, because he was a Canadian, we were sort of dialed in, even though NBC at the time wasn't showing him until like the last four holes. But those were the two that stood out for me.
It was interesting because I was on the PGA Tour radio broadcast that week, but I wasn't in La Quinta. I was in the studio in D.C. doing hosting duties from the studio in D.C. And to Bob's note with NBC, all of a sudden, you know, they have one camera at that property because, you know, three golf courses in rotation in the Old Hope. And they had no crews out there. They had nothing. And then finally, they have a camera set up on the last hole, and we're calling Adam's second shot into the green, his chip and his putt. And that's it. We're calling it off.
Crazy.
A monitor in D.C. Scully, performance of the year. And did you go down the same road as Bob? It was a round of golf or a week of golf?
Yeah, it was a round of golf for me as well. And for me, it goes back to the final round of the Open Championship. Jordan Spieth, just the whirlwind of the round it was. Starting off with his first tee shot, he hits this 3-wood. He absolutely loves it. Club twirls it. The ball sits in the rough.
Hangs up on the
slope.
Doesn't
move. And he's just yelling at Greller. And Michael Greller is looking at him like, okay, let's get over this. Let's get through it. Then, of course, you get to the 13th hole, the half-an-hour fiasco, going back to the range and making the bogey of a lifetime and apologizing to Kuchar. Then on 14, nearly holing out. Crazy. And then the eagle and the birdie and the birdie. It was an unbelievable display of golf. And that sort of atmosphere with that sort of pressure on you with what's happened to him in the past, failing at the Masters in 2016. What a round there by Jordan Spieth.
Well, I know the final round of the Open Championship is certainly going to come up across the shows, year in review shows again. It won't come up for me in performance of the year, I can tell you that, but I hear what you're saying, you know, and again, how you deem the word performance. It was certainly the biggest bounce back I saw all year within the same structure of a round. From going to your D to your A in the flip of a switch was outstanding. We'll get into that later. For me, I've been redundant on this all year. The performance of the year in a single round for me was Charlie Hoffman. You guys have heard me say this all year. I just couldn't believe you. When you beat the best players in the world in the field stroke average by 10 shots on the worst day I've ever seen at Augusta. And when I talk about the opening round at the Masters this year, and I think about Mackenzie Hughes, and I think about Adam Hadwin making their first competitive turn around Augusta National, what a way to be introduced to that property. What a way to maybe have a skewed version or vision of what that golf course is, because it played nothing like Augusta National plays traditionally in the opening round of the Masters. It was the biggest bear we probably saw on tour this year, especially considering what a letdown Aaron Hills was without the wind and the weather in Aaron Hills. Aaron Hills was super soft. The Open Championship, beautiful weather. We always know the Open Championship, if it doesn't have Mother Nature beating it up, you're going to get low scores, thus Brandon Grace. The PGA is the sternest but fairest setup traditionally. It's always fair, leaning towards the players. And maybe just some common sense in setup, so to speak. The Masters, to suggest that Augusta National was the harshest setup all year of all the majors in the opening round is kind of silly to hear yourself say that. It's not usual. However, that's what we had. Mm-hmm. And Charlie Hoffman goes out and shoots 65 that day. Was an absolute machine. And, you know, for a guy who's never won a major, he has played very well under tough conditions and tough setups and has had good top five, top 10 performances over the last few years in majors. Still not the W, but what a wonderful day for... I know you and I, Bob, were shaking our head that day at Augusta. We couldn't believe that.
It was hard just to stand up walking, let alone hit a golf ball around.
I remember after the round, Rory McIlroy was quoted as saying, "Holy bleep, what?"
Yeah, exactly.
What course is he playing? Yeah. Now, lots coming up. Of course, letdown of the year. We're going to talk some Tiger, Canadian golf story. But on the other side... we're talking comeback player of the year. There's a few names you could toss around in this category. And if we're talking comeback player of the year, i.e. calendar year of 2017, well, who knows? Maybe that person hasn't stuck up his hand yet, and we're a few weeks away from that. This is Golf Talk Canada.
This segment of GTC was brought to you by Acura. Precision, crafted performance. Visit Acura.ca for our latest lineup, special offers, and dealer incentives. This is Golf Talk Canada, presented by Acura. This segment of Golf Talk Canada is brought to you by TaylorMade and the all-new P790 irons with speed foam technology. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Sacchino and Bob Weeks.
Welcome back to GTC Year in Review. Mark Sacchino, Bob Weeks, Adam Scully, as we break down the year that was. Just talking performance of the year previously and streaks, but... there's always new names in the world of golf. We got familiar with a few of them this year. Xander Schauffele stands out in my mind simply because, you know, especially being at Eastlake and watching that final round and seeing a kid win twice in his rookie campaign and one of them being the tour championship. Not a big guy, hits it an absolute mile and quite the performance. And there was more names than Xander Schauffele that kind of appeared out of nowhere that we're going to have to get used to. But there was also comeback players of the year, players that, you know, maybe, you know, had a, I don't want to call it a career year, but a year that maybe we didn't see coming, that all of a sudden threw their hat back into the ring. So Scully, talking comeback player of the year, where did you go with this? Why did you go that way? And was it a hard one for you? Was this a hard category for you to go, yo, that's the guy or gal for that matter?
For me, it was fairly easy. This is a guy who came off some major shoulder surgery. He got a win early last year by the name of Pat Perez. One win, six top tens, 15th in the FedEx Cup in 2017, a cool $4.3 million. Plus, he's carried it over into the start of this wraparound season, winning the CIMB, T5 at Nine Bridges, T24 at WGC HSBC. But the thing I almost love the most about him is his honesty in interviews. He was quoted at the Tour Championship as saying, "I don't like to work out. I like to sit. I like to have a bad diet." And after he won overseas, he was asked, "Are you going to change anything?" He said, "No, I'm going to have fun. I'm going to have a bad diet. I'm going to enjoy my friends." And he's a breath of fresh air for golf in that sense and for sports in general, because the sports world is so used to athletes with their major cliches and not really saying anything in interviews. But Pat Perez is someone who's actually honest, and it's someone who people can maybe even learn from, that sort of thing, just to sort of speak their minds on when they're being interviewed.
Yeah, I think it's hard to go against Pat Perez personally in me this category. He's the guy that kind of, you know, jumped out obviously for me, especially what he's done recently, like you said, with the win in this wraparound schedule. You know, 41 years old, made it to the Tour Championship. Yep. Come on, top 30. And I love his transparency, like you suggested. He's
hilarious.
I don't look like those guys. I don't work out.
He's got the great flow.
He's got the flow. Yeah.
And something that's improved with him as well is that his temper still isn't his best asset. He used to be a bit more of a hothead, if you will, but I think he's calmed that down enough that he can bounce back from making a poor bogey. He's still got that flair and sort of, he gets really ticked off at times, but he doesn't throw as many clubs maybe nowadays. So.
Well, yeah, certainly. I think, you know, he digests things a little easier being out there for so long. Yeah. Bob, was this a slam dunk for you with Pat Perez? And were there other people in the running?
Yeah, I mean, Pat Perez certainly got the most attention, not the least of which is because of those outrageous comments that he makes and stuff that are so different. But I'll throw another name out there, that a guy who won for the first time since 2006, Rod Pampling, an Australian guy who at 47 won Las Vegas. He's a guy who's been out there, you know, as a pro for 22 years. He's been back and forth the last few years, sort of playing web tour events, playing PGA Tour. And to get through and win at 47, And really out of nowhere, perhaps, I would think, at Vegas last year was really something to watch. And so there's, I don't know if comeback player, it's a long time since he's for him to come
back,
more than 10 years, but a pretty impressive performance.
Now, curious with you guys, because we will do predictions, as we always do, as we do our year in review specials, as we go out through the winter and the off season, and suggest what we anticipate in 2018. So before we kind of get to that, though, Tiger Woods, we're going to talk Tiger later on in the year in review specials, in today's show, to be a matter of fact, of what we expect to see from Tiger at the Hero World Challenge, as well as, you know, what would be a success for Tiger. You know, playing all 4 days without being carted off, as far as I'm concerned,
absolutely,
is a success.
Yeah.
We'll get into that. However, if Tiger Woods, and this is ridiculous because I don't believe that this is even possible, but I'm going to throw it out there because I know there's people listening this morning that actually believe what I'm going to say is possible. I don't. If Tiger Woods were to win the Hero World Challenge, a non-official PGA Tour event in the calendar year 2017, so I understand that we're not, you know, talking about the PGA Tour season here, but the calendar year of 2017... Because of the size of that story, is he the comeback player of the year, winning a, what is it, 17, 18-person field? Is he the comeback player of the year if that goes down?
No, because that's as you just pointed out at the end there, it's only 18 players in the field. Most of them are kind of hit and giggle out there. It's a fun event. It's the new version of the skins game, perhaps. Mm-hmm. I mean, guys are trying, guys are playing, and there's some money to be won, but it's not an official event. There's no real pressure on these guys, so no, it doesn't for me anyway.
Having said that, I remember when Tiger won the Hero, it was his first win post-scandal.
Right.
And I remember how the fist pump he gave, I wouldn't say he'd be the comeback player of the year, it'd be quite a story. It would be remarkable to think that he'd go from...
Maybe headline of the year?
It could be the headline of the year. It could be, you know, propelling for next year to think, holy crap, this guy came back and won his first start since the fourth back surgery and the DUI and everything that happened. But winning, I'd have to wait and see because that'd be unbelievable.
I'm going to give you one name now, and I'm going to tell you why I'm giving you that name because we are in the comeback player of the year story. I'm going to give you the name Jason Day because Jason Day for me will be the 2018 comeback player of the year. Now, I know that sounds funny. He's still a star of the sport. He's still, you know, making it, pre-qualifying for all the majors, World Golf Championship events. But after this season, he has fallen outside the top 10 in the world officially. Mm-hmm. Okay, this was a player that was number one. He has not won a golf tournament since the Players' Championship of 2016. We're approaching 2 years without a victory for Jason Day. I think Jason Day wins multiple times in 2018. And I think he's going to be the comeback player of the year. Around the horn here, Skull, starting with you, top of mind, is there a player that you anticipate a bounce back to win this category a year from now? You're handing out the hardware 12 months from now to the comeback player of the year of 2018. Who is that player?
I'd go with Rory McIlroy. He had such a unique year this year going, with the new gear, new caddy. He got married. He had the injury. Things were just sort of all over the place for Rory. But I think with a couple months of stability in terms of training and the off season that he gets, I think that Rory could be the guy to come and maybe win a couple PGA Tour events. And who knows, maybe a green jacket in April.
Ooh. I'm going to go Bubba Watson. I think Bubba is a guy who had a terrible year this year, and there's a lot of different theories as to why that happens. Some of it, his diet where he cut out all sugar, some of it, the golf ball that he was using. Mm-hmm. But I think he's just too good a player to play that consistently poorly again for another year.
Oh, this is good. So you got to go on record on this. Let the record show that Bob suggested 20. Because later on, when we get into later on in our year in review specials, when we get to 18 predictions, Bob's going to look at me sideways. Because I have a Bubba prediction for 2018 that might be a little different than what Bob is suggesting. All right, lots to get to still here in our early part of our year in review specials. We're going to talk some more Tiger, obviously. A lot of Canadian stories this year, and I'm curious to see where you guys are going to go with this because there were so many different ways you could have gone on Canadian stories. Like, we could do a whole show on just the Canadian year in review, easy. Do several shows. If you're looking at amateur golf, professional golf, all the tours, some of the drama with legendary courses like Glen Abbey, etc. There's so many places to go. So we're going to get into that, try to do it in a segment. Good luck on that, boys. But coming up next, we're going to do letdown of the year or disappointment of the year, however you want to put it. And there's so many different ways you could go here. There was a lot of high notes in 2017. Some of them we've already mentioned with the early part with Hadwin and 59s and Hughes wins and things of that nature. But there was a bunch of letdowns as well. We'll get into them next. This is Golf Talk Canada Year in Review.
This segment of GTC, presented by Acura, was brought to you by TaylorMade and the all-new P790 irons with speed foam technology. This is Golf Talk Canada, presented by Acura. This segment of Golf Talk Canada is brought to you by Moto Caddy and Stewart Golf Dream Machines, the Canadian market leader in electric walking golf trolleys. Sold in over 30 countries around the world, they offer the widest selection of golf trolleys for players of all ages, abilities, and budgets. For more information, visit jpsmgolf.com. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Zucchino and Bob Weeks.
Welcome back to GTC Year in Review Special. All right, let's get all Scrooge and grumpy on our audience, boys. Mark Zucchino, Bob Weeks, Adam Scully. And we're talking letdown, disappointment of the year. And although 2017, I thought, had some amazing highlights, especially in the first half, second half of the season, there was a lot of letdowns for me. And I could have went many different ways in this category. But I'm going to go with a gentleman who we just finished the last break with, the last segment with. Adam Scully mentioned Rory McIlroy as comeback player of the year for him next year, as he predicts. And I'm saying to Scully, I hope he's right, because he better be, because what a letdown it was for Rory. I would suggest to you, and you could, you know, argue with me or tell me if I'm wrong, outside of Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson, I would put Rory maybe next in line or in the same category as the most naturally gifted. Maybe DJ you could put in there as well. But is the most naturally gifted athlete born to play this game. Just tremendous tee to green. Has shots that no one else has. You know, brought up with a golf club in his hand to be a champion golfer from the wee age of whatever, right? In the Hollywood Golf Club Hills in Ireland, right? And here we go, winless. The big elephant in the room is Augusta, which Scully alluded to in the previous segment. And, you know, has it become too big an elephant in the room, Augusta? Is his whole season about the Masters? Is that part of it? To go winless, to fall out of the conversation, really, when it comes to favorites as we head into major golf championships. It's absolutely ridiculous. And it all comes down to this, and Bob and I, Utah and I talked about this. We exhausted this. All year, he is near dead last or dead last or near dead last in wedge categories from 120 yards in putting, in all these categories where if you're not good in those categories, you're not taking advantage of your distance and abilities off the tee. Why did DJ win three in a row this year? Why has DJ all of a sudden elevated himself to the number one player in the world? He's always hit at 900 miles. Look at his wedge and putting numbers in the last 24 to 36 months compared to the first part of his career. They're night and day. He has so many shots now inside 120 yards, so much control with the wedges. He's a better putter. And the fact that he did go off to a cut off the tee to find more fairways is certainly part of it. I'm not going to argue the fact that he isn't a better overall driver with the cut versus the draw. But the fact of the matter is, Rory McIlroy can dominate a field with his driver. But if you're hitting it 340 down the middle and putting sandwich in your hand so you can miss greens and hit it to 37 feet, you're not going to win golf tournaments. Rory McIlroy, for me, I'm a huge fan. I love listening to him. He's transparent, and in our business, to get somebody unfiltered that tells you something is a joy. He's a great guy, a great ambassador, a great player. What a disappointment, and I'm praying to God that Scully's right, that he's the comeback player of the year, because he's my disappointment. All right, Bob, who is your disappointment of the year?
I went a little bit of a different route. My disappointment of the year, my letdown of the year, was actually an incident.
Oh?
And
you're not going to talk about the time I spilled coffee on you, right?
Whoa. I'll leave that
or
for
the time I ate the last piece of cheesecake at the cheese factory.
No, I'm going to leave that for the overrated performance of the year. But for me, the letdown of the year was the LPGA's handling of the Lexi Thompson ruling in the major championship.
Bravo.
How that came about, not disputing for a minute the fact that Lexi broke the rules. She did that. But how they handled it, telling her in the middle of a fairway, coming down the stretch a day after it happened, and allowing that whole situation just to take over the entire tournament, to me, was just the biggest disappointment and letdown. And the LPGA Tour, they're going to come up again and later on in some other categories as well. It was not a great year for the people running those some of those tournaments, but that, to me, was the biggest one. And how you let that happen at a major championship, how you let it go with someone calling in, finding this ruling, and how it all transpired. And poor Lexi, I felt sorry for her. Yes, she did break the rule. But tell her that when it happens, that you know, before she signs her scorecard. Once you sign your scorecard, I think
Absolutely.
All that stuff should go out the window. And it really had a just a huge, terrible effect on that tournament.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I can't understand why golf has to be different than other sports. Other sports, they have certain things, mechanisms in place to try to get calls right the first time. And then they some sports have a mechanism to get calls right the second time in terms of replay, et cetera. But it happens and it's contained within the body of the game itself. There's not an outside agency or an after the fact. The game's over three periods and the Leafs win 4-3, but the next day it's deemed that you know something was a mistake and they reverse the changes. I don't understand why golf has to be different. And for all our listeners, and we have these rules maniacs out there, and I know who you are because I golf with some of you, and you almost wear a badge of honor trying to, you know, look for trickery and holes and just to prove that you have some type of higher golf intellect because, you know, you're catching people on these things. That's not what the sport's all about. The rules are there for integrity to try to protect the field and to try to get the proper outcome. As long as the field is honestly trying to be protected and the players in that circumstance right there at that time can digest what's going on and can live with it, that's the sport. Mm-hmm. It's a sport. And I am 100% with you, Bob, and I forgot about this incident. I actually buried this in my subconscious so I could actually not be angry. But that's a great one. I wasn't thinking of that. I was thinking more about a player.
Yeah.
And I love that you went down that road because I would love for 2018, let's have one calendar year without one of these things.
Yeah, exactly.
Would that not be nice?
Exactly.
Scully, for you, letdown of the year.
So I went back to a player, and this is a guy who was absolutely thrilling at last year's Ryder Cup for the U.S. He took part in one of the most epic matches we have ever seen, Mr. Patrick Reed. Our expectations for him this year were through the roof. I even picked him to win the Masters in our in our Golf Talk Canada radio Masters pool and failed miserably, by the way.
Missed the cut
by about a trillion. What the weirdest thing with him, though, was he came out just after the Masters and said, my lies and lofts are off by 2.5 degrees.
Yes.
How on earth is that possible for a PGA Tour player to have this?
I have no idea. I found that absolutely ridiculous. That he played for an extended period of time as well with the lofts and lies.
But how do you do that?
Yeah, I don't know. It's amazing because, you know, Cameron Jacobs, our good friend at TaylorMade, who you know tweaks all my gear up at the along with the rest of the team, of course, up at the performance lab.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like a human lie loft machine.
Oh yeah,
I get a new club, like I get my P790s, and you can give me my 7-iron, I can put it down, and I can tell you if it's 1 degree off with my eye. Now they think I'm insane, but sure enough, they measure it. I'm right. They get a kick out of this. I'm like a human lie loft machine. But I've played the game for so long with the same specs that I can actually just pick it up. Like, I don't even need a machine. I can say, bump that 1 degree, boom, boom, boom. I am not one of the most elite athletes in the world. Just throwing that out there, news break, guys, okay?
Close. You're pretty close.
I'm a chop on a global golf scale, and this guy went months?
Yeah.
That's unbelievable. That,
wouldn't you notice?
Yeah, like, as a PGA Tour player, but, I mean, he went on, he had 4 top 10s, 4 missed cuts. You know, it was just a very strange year. He shot 82 earlier in this wraparound season overseas as well. Just a very strange
year. You know what's interesting and strange about this, too, is you bring up an interesting topic that we collectively, as the golf media, are always looking to hand out the trampoline award at the end of international team competitions. Well, this year, for the Ryder Cup, it went to Patrick Reed. He's going to take this international team competition stage that he dominated on, and he's going to trampoline that into 2017 with major victories and all these wins. Thomas Peters got that award at one point. Jamie Donaldson, who barely missed his card. Almost missed it. Used it on our Year Review TV special.
That was awesome.
He got it for Team Europe at one point. We've been handing these things out for years. And for some reason, Ian Poulter is the prime example, who has never won a stroke play event on U.S. soil still to date. Why does this happen, and who's getting that award this year, guys? Because obviously, international team at President's Cup, let's just
pretend there's nobody on that one. It's down to 12 people.
All right. But from the American standpoint, you know, who's getting that award? Who's getting the Springboard Award this year, and why do we do this, Bob?
Well, I guess if I was really being sly, I would say it's Tiger Woods, captain. But you know, I'd go with Kevin Chappell. I think he was a guy who finally got that victory after coming so close for so many years, got that and played pretty decently alongside Charlie Hoffman for most cases at the President's Cup this year. So he'd be my pick.
Okay, Kevin Chappell. I like that pick, too. I do. And Kevin's been super consistent for the last few years, too. So I don't expect him to go away by any means, because he hasn't. Can he
Turn him into more wins,
turn
that's
into more
what I would
wins
say.
Is the key. Yeah, that's it. All right, Skull, why do we do this, and who gets the award? And why do we do this, and it never happens?
That's a great question. I got to say Daniel Berger, another guy from the 2011 high school class. And him and Tiger sort of have this bromance, if you will.
It sounds
like they're becoming closer and closer. And Berger's got that really unique golf swing, but he's got under pressure, he's been excellent, and there were a couple of great shots in that President's Cup where I remember on that first hole, I believe it was on the Saturday, he almost holed out from standing in the water on that first hole. It was one of the coolest shots we've ever seen. He's a guy, he's an excellent ball striker, he's a streaky putter, but looking ahead, he could definitely be that guy for sure.
Lots to get to coming up. What was the golf tournament of the year? Again, so many different ways you can go with this. Criteria, very vague, very open. There's lots of golf tournaments. There's majors. There's non-majors. There's team competitions. There's many tours around the world. Of course, there's our National Open right here in Canada. We'll let you know our picks for Tournament of the Year. This is our Year in Review special on GTC.
This segment of GTC, presented by Acura, was brought to you by Moto Caddy and Stewart Golf Dream Machines, the Canadian market leader in electric walking golf trolleys. Sold in over 30 countries around the world, they offer the widest selection of golf trolleys for players of all ages, abilities, and budgets. For more information, visit jpsmgolf.com. This is Golf Talk Canada, presented by Acura. This segment of Golf Talk Canada is brought to you by WeatherTech Canada, Canada's leader in automotive accessories, including DigiFit Floor Liner, the most advanced concept in floor protection today. Visit WeatherTech.ca. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Zucchino and Bob Weeks.
Welcome back to GTC as we break down the year of 2017 in the world of golf. And of course, there was plenty of golf played all around the world on multiple tours, male, female, etc. Team competitions, single competitions. But what was the tournament of the year? What was the one that stands out for you where you go, wow, that is the highlight, the crown jewel of 2017 when I'm talking about golf tournaments, period. Let's start with you, Scully. For you, what is the tournament of the year and why?
Well, for me, it was when your brother from another mother, Sergio Garcia, went on to win the Masters. It was just, him winning his first major after so many years, as Jim Nantz poetically said when he made that putt. That was just unbelievable to finally see him win. But the actual duel with him and Justin Rose going back and forth, Sergio making that pretty good bogey on the 13th hole, and coming back and nearly making an albatross on the 15th hole, but making that eagle. And the way he sort of, it was sort of Sergio almost in a nutshell. He had the putt to win the Masters on the 18th hole, and he completely missed it from about 5 feet above the hole. Looked like he completely misread it. But then he bounced back and made that birdie on the 18th hole. It was just an unbelievable way to kick off the year. It was poetic. It was majestic. It was a touch of class by Sergio. It was the highlight probably of my year in terms of watching golf, and for him to finally put his name, you know, as a major champion is quite special.
I'm just curious, Scully, was there any tournament at all that was in the running other than the Masters for you? Was there anything else that popped in your head and you had to debate, or was it just a Masters in a slam dunk? Because I've got, you know, for me, And we'll get, obviously, to my pick. But I had a hard time finding, you know, a clear-cut second place when I was thinking about this. I think quite often when I was grinding this out, it was like, okay, that's my tournament of the year. And then I could throw a blanket over another 8 or 9 events and call them the second best. That was my feeling. Did you get the same sensation, or was there one that was knocking on the door?
Well, for me, actually, I mean, the Spieth-Kuchar duel was remarkable. But another Spieth duel that was pretty darn good was a Northern Trust Open with him and Dustin Johnson in the FedEx Cup playoffs. So it was certainly, it was a great event to watch. And especially in the playoff when DJ flew it, what, 340 yards over the water and had a flip wedge and hit it to about 4 feet.
And really one of the rare occasions in golf where we know we're all fascinated and fixated with distance, but it is one of the rare occasions of golf where distance beats putting. And it,
absolutely.
And it happened once in the playoffs. Like
And that was one of the cool things with the Pro Tracer as well, to see the different lines that Spieth went way right down the center of the fairway, and DJ, you know, chopped across the corner and flew everything by a mile. That was one of the cool things where golf technology is pretty cool.
Very cool. Bob, tournament of the year, what is it and why is it, sir?
So I took a little different tack because I knew you guys would probably go down the road of Masters. You're looking at me like you knew I would do that.
So, I like that you do that.
So I knew you'd probably go. And if I was to say right out at the top, I would say either the Masters or the Open Championship, because both were riveting as far as I was concerned. Mm-hmm. But I decided to go to an event that was played in May. It was called the Golf Sixes. The Centurion Club. And this is the first one where the European Tour used the shot clock.
Yes. In terms of innovation, you could not argue this, could
no,
you?
It was a wild tournament. They had they brought guys out. You know, there were 6-hole matches. They brought guys out with pyrotechnics and announced them and music and everything. And they had a really different format. But to me, the key was the shot clocks. I really like that. And they're going to have a whole tournament next year. It used to be the Austrian Open. It's now going to be called the Shot Clock Masters. And I loved Dustin Johnson's comments when he was asked about it a couple weeks before the end of the season. In the Asian Swing, he said, "There's going to be a bunch of guys who are going to get some penalties in that thing if they had it on a PGA Tour event." Mm-hmm. So, I think it's an interesting innovation. And I remember when they brought shot clocks into curling, how that changed the sport dramatically in terms of speeding it up. So we'll see if this has any buzz. And the other one, just quickly, this was one that I forgot on Golf Talk Canada TV or your interview, which was the USGA Senior Women's Championship. Dominated by Canadians.
Yes.
4 in the quarterfinals.
Yes, we got called out on Twitter for that,
we
unfortunately.
Did. 2 in the finals. Apologies. Both finalists from Canadians. Judith Carinas, who ended up winning us, and Terrell Samuel, who's from my club at Weston.
Yes.
So that was a pretty good performance in terms of if you're looking at amateur golf.
Now, both of us know Keith Pelley. You know him better than I do, but both known Keith for a very long time. Is he got a direct bat phone line to Vince McMahon? Because I think Vince McMahon is the deputy commissioner of the European Tour. That's what this started to feel like a little bit, right?
Well, you know, I think he's starting to shake things up a little bit, and this has kind of been his MO over his career. You know, I'm going to throw a bunch of innovative, different stuff against the wall, and not all of it's going to stick. Mm-hmm. But when it does, you know, it makes for pretty good. And you can look around this building where we are here at TSN.
And see it.
There's a bunch of, a lot of legacy from Keith Pelley here.
Very much so. For me, guys, I'm going to go the easy route. I'm not going to be as creative as Bob and as intelligent an answer as that was for Bob. For me, I'm going to go straight with my gut and my emotions. And it's Sergio all the way. To just watch what that guy went through. I said this on TSN television when we did our year in review special. I said, he was the black hat. He was the villain. He was spitting in cups. He was blaming the golf universe. He was pointing the finger at every human on the planet other than himself. He was the villain at Bethpage at the U.S. Open, the villain multiple times at the Ryder Cup, booed on this side of the world, cheered on the other side of the world. Then almost sympathetic, almost pathetic at times. To come back and to do this, and feel the weight of that crowd and the wave of support to put him as the hero, the comeback story, the beloved veteran trying to finally get it done. I said it on TSN television. It's like Rocky knocking out Drago on Christmas Day. If I can change and you can change, we can all change, right? It was beautiful. It was a movie script, and it was the tournament of the year. And with all that put aside, you take all that out of it, I think Scully hit something on the head too. Regardless of that, you have 2 of the top 10 players in the world in a playoff for the year's first major. Mm-hmm. So that in itself, at Augusta makes for tremendous television and tremendous golf. Also, the background of Justin Rose's history with Augusta, which doesn't get spoken about enough of how many times he's played well there and has yet to win. You put all that in the mix with the legacy of Sergio Garcia, and that's the tournament of the year. And I think I would have to go outside the box the way Bob has done with shot clocks and things of that nature to figure out what my second tournament of the year was, because other than that, I could throw a blanket over about six or seven other tournaments, including the Northern Trust, et cetera, and say, yeah, that would be the second best.
And looking back now, actually, I mean, the final round of the PGA Championship, there were five guys atop the leaderboard tied at one point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A Canadian Graham Villette's up there as well. Quail Hollow was definitely reconstructed and redesigned. A lot of that golf course was for the PGA Championship. That was definitely, I guess, maybe almost in the underrated category, we could say as well. That was a great tournament going from start, or really from maybe the final 36 holes on. But to see, you know, Justin Thomas fire through from that cluster of guys, including Hideki Matsuyama, that was another great tournament.
Put the cherry on the top of his season.
Yeah, but that was another great tournament.
Great tournament, great year. Lots more to come on the year-end review specials here on Golf Talk Canada. We'll say goodbye to our national audience, but stay tuned for Golf Talk Canada throughout the winter season here. We don't go away. Year-end reviews, Festivus, so much to come before we kick off Season 8 of Golf Talk Canada in 2018. Thank you so much for listening. Remember, first good decision on the golf course starts in the closet.
This segment of GTC, presented by Acura, was brought to you by WeatherTech Canada, Canada's leader in automotive accessories, including DigiFit Floor Liner, the most advanced concept in floor protection today. Visit weathertech.ca. Thank you for listening, and don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Golf Talk Canada. For blogs, show archives, video highlights, and TV schedule, visit us online at golftalkcanada.ca. We'll be right back with more GTC. This segment of Golf Talk Canada, presented by Acura, is brought to you by St. Kitts, the Caribbean's most welcoming golf experience. Follow your heart to breathtaking golf in warm, inviting St. Kitts. For information on wonderful resorts and championship courses, visit golfawaytours.com today. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Zucchino and Bob Weeks.
This is Golf Talk Canada Year in Review Special. Mark Zucchino, Bob Weeks, Adam Scully, as we break down 2017, all the highlights, all the lowlights, all the stories, all the headlines. And you can't talk about 2017 without talking a lot of Canadiana. I mentioned previously in our Year in Review Special that we could do an entire show quite easily on just the year that was in Canada. In fact, maybe we'll do that at some point over the off season. But for today, let's talk about just the Canadian golf story of the year. If you had to pick just one out of the dozens, you could go over professional golf on men's, ladies tours, amateur tours, stories behind the scenes. There are so many different places you can go. Bob, for you, I know, you know, obviously you're covering Canadian golf 24/7. You're close to a lot of these people as well that you cover. And I know that this was probably a hard category for you, knowing how much we pull for our boys on tour and Hadwin and Hughes. And there's some new guys now making their debut in 17, 18. But there's so many different ways you could go. Where did you go, Canadian Golf Story of the Year?
Well, first off, I think it's great that there were so many choices to be made, because in past years, it's been so obvious. There's been like one story. But for me, it actually was the CP Canadian Women's Open in Ottawa with Brooke Henderson, and seeing what happened at that tournament in her hometown, the crowds that came out. I have never seen anything like it outside of perhaps two other situations. One, when David Hearn was in the final group at the RBC Canadian Open a couple of years ago, and when Mike Weir had a chance to play with Vijay Singh and had a chance to win. This was right up there with that. I mean, the crowds that were following her every shot, every step of the way. I don't know how she pulled the club back on the first hole. They were like eight deep the entire first hole at the Ottawa Hunt and Country Club. And then, you know, when she was making the cut on Friday in almost dark, it was like she'd won the tournament. She sunk a long putt to kind of make the cut, and then comes out on Saturday and shoots the course record in front of another huge audience. So that to me was just the enormity of that event, the pressure that was on poor Brooke to try and play well, that she was able to respond on Saturday. You wrap that all up, and to me, that was easily the story of the year.
It's amazing to me too, Bob. I know she's 20 years old, and we talk about her a lot, and rightfully so. She's done so much so soon in her career, and I guess you could. I guess this is a bit of a redundant statement because I'm guessing you could say this about any athlete that finds so much success at a young age. Maybe not all. You know, Jennifer Capriati, for instance. You know, put that a name like that out there, and it isn't for everybody. Mm. However, the way Brooke handles herself away from the golf course, like outside the ropes, and the example she showed that week that you're referring to, you were commenting to me when you got home, the way she managed herself, the way she managed all the expectations, the way she spoke to media, fans, etc., and was kind of there wearing a hat for everyone, and then fights to make the cut in course record? Come on.
I know. It's pretty impressive to watch this young gal. And, you know, you never know what route. With women's golf, you know, sometimes women decide that they're going to branch off and they're going to have a family, a.k.a. Lorena Ochoa. Sometimes they just battle on through Julie Inkster. They keep playing. So we don't know what the future is going to hold for Brooke. Right. But, boy, if she keeps going at this pace, it's going to be pretty impressive to go along and watch the ride.
Certainly is. Scully, so many different ways. And, obviously, Brooke, you know, she is the, you know, most successful professional golfer we have, period, end of story, sure. Right now, with all due respect to all our great players who have wins on the PGA Tour, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But this is a favorite when she tees it up in majors, okay? Not someone in majors, a favorite when she tees it up in majors alongside maybe two or three other potential names on that given week. Did you go down the Brooke road? Did you go another way? There's so many different angles here.
I decided to go down the Mackenzie Hughes road on more, I guess, of a personal level. Working, I do some work in the TSN SportsCenter newsroom. And when he won, or he was in the final round last Sunday, it was last year around this time on the Sunday.
The Sanderson Farms.
No, at the RSM Classic.
Oh, sorry, the Anderson, RSM.
At the RSM Classic. It's a Sunday in the newsroom, so the NFL's on, everything's on. But for some reason, everyone was sort of huddled around my pod where the golf was going on, the final three, four holes when Mac was in the hunt. And when they played that first playoff hole almost in the dark, and Billy Horschel missed a putt that was a foot and a half, 2 feet. It was maybe a spike mark, and was sort of, we're coming back for the next morning. And to see Mac win the way he did, sort of flying it over the green, and they were wearing like snow pants out there. It was so cold that next morning during the playoff hole. And for him to make a putt from just off the green and see the next three guys miss to win his first PGA Tour event, from how far he came and how much of a surprise it was, that was just an unbelievable moment, kickstarting one of the greatest years of Canadian golf I'd say we've ever seen.
And what's interesting about that, too, is, and, you know, we all know Brad Fritch. He was part of our Masters crew this year for TSN TV. And how hard it is to get starts in the early part or when you first take the jump from the web.com to the PGA Tour. The challenge is not only getting in fields at times, but then when you do get those valuable starts, you got to play well or you fall down that priority list when they start reshuffling, and then you can't get in, and then you find yourself part-time on the web.com tour and you're like, hold on, I thought I had a PGA Tour card. Why can't I peg it up? And it becomes all that more difficult to retain your PGA Tour status. The fact that Mackenzie Hughes goes out and wins early in his rookie season, it's a life-changing moment. It changes the rest of his life overnight. He's locked in for 2 years. He's in the major championships. He plans his schedule. Mm-hmm. It's basically, I don't want to put, you know, you hate to say it was so much weight in it, but there's a good chance if Mackenzie Hughes doesn't win, think of how difficult it is if he doesn't win that tournament. Does he get the starts? He doesn't go to the Augusta. He doesn't go to the majors. He could be back on the web.com tour this year. Mm-hmm. And that's not a shot against him. That's the reality of not being able to access the tour with a tour card.
On the other side of that equation is to take a page from what Nick Taylor did. He did the same thing, won early. And then he said he kind of, you know, changed a little bit.
Off.
You kind of take the pedal off a little bit, and you still forget that you're just a rookie. You still forget that you're playing these tournaments for the first time, seeing these courses that other guys have seen 30, 40, 50, 60 times. Right. So there's that warning, too. But I think Mac's a pretty smart guy. I think he's got that figured out.
Sorry, Skull, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say one other note on Mac. He recently became a father.
Yes,
as well.
Saw that on Twitter.
So a great all-around year.
And a Leaf fan, so I got to love him. I'm going to take the easy way out. which I did in a previous category, I believe, as well. So this might be a theme. I'm going to say that just the overall Canadian golf season in general, so I don't want to, you know, upset any of our LPGA fans and whatnot, because Brooke is her own story, and plus we had so many other great young Canadian female players coming up, and players like Elena Sharp who were having career years and showing that they're on the verge of winning, etc. But the year for me, because I'm on the road quite often with the PGA Tour, it affects me personally. And when you're doing PGA Tour radio play-by-play, like when Bob gets sent out on assignment from TSN, if there's a Canadian in the mix, they want to know the Canadian story. And Bob's doing his one-on-one with Adam or his one-on-one with Mac or whoever. Well, it's the same thing on PGA Tour radio. If there's a Canadian in the mix and has an opportunity to do something on the weekend, yours truly gets to line up with him and call the action. And so you definitely feel personally and emotionally invested in it. There's such a great group of guys out there on tour, as you guys know. And just the year that was on the PGA Tour, to have two wins from two different guys, to have a 59, to watch these guys play major championships. You know, it was quite the year. And I think 18 is going to be just as special. I'm glad to see that Hearnsey is going to get, by the looks of it, he's going to get like 16 to 18 starts with conditional status, which is absolutely fantastic because he deserves it. I know he went through some changes in the last 12 months, and now some equipment changes again, and there might be apparently more equipment changes coming again, I'm hearing. But, you know, maybe Dillette can be healthy. Yeah. Who knows? That is a huge story, question mark itself. I'm sure hope so. With Ben Silverman out there, and it's just, there's so many stories, but the year that was on the PGA Tour was just so much fun. And I think we have to, you know, add this to this conversation, even though it wasn't a pick for many of us. We have a few minutes left here before we go to break. The Glen Abbey saga, as a story, I don't want to make it Canadian Golf Story of the Year, because I would rather go cup half full on Canadian Golf Story of the Year, because we could line up 10 stories that are awesome in Canadian golf this year and go, those are Canadian Golf Story of the Year. And the only one negative on that board would be the fact that lawyers are going to make a bunch of money fighting in court with municipalities, fighting in court with private ownership over who has the right to do what with the property of Glen Abbey, and the golf community is going to lose, lawyers are going to win, we're still in the dark, and we know one thing, Bob, the last Canadian Open in Glen Abbey history will certainly finally, because we've been saying this for 2-3 years now, will finally be played in 2018. We can sing Glen Abbey's swan song. Where it goes from here, though, who knows?
Yeah. Lots of different options out there. They're going to have to find some spot, because if they do build a new course or build a new facility, it's not going to be ready by 2019 at this point. So, yeah, there's, you know, the whole Glen Abbey saga is sort of, it's dirty in some ways. You've got one side, you know, saying it's a historical spot, and the other side saying we're going to plow it under if we can't build on it. And it just really kind of a sad sort of finale for what's been a great golf course. And I don't know, I don't have a stake in it. I don't care if it gets built on or not. It's going to be gone. It doesn't matter to me if it's going to be gone. They put a grocery store in Maple Leaf Gardens, so I mean, they can do anything, right?
On the other side, Tiger talk, and we could do a whole show again on Tiger, but now with the recent developments of him playing in the Hero World Challenge, man, we could go forever. So this talk might be quite different than what it would have been, say, a week ago, a month ago, half a year ago. We'll talk Tiger next. This is Golf Talk Canada Year in Review.
This segment of GTC, presented by Acura, was brought to you by St. Kitts, the Caribbean's most welcoming golf experience. Follow your heart to breathtaking golf in warm, inviting St. Kitts. For information on wonderful resorts and championship courses, visit golfawaytours.com today. This segment of Golf Talk Canada, presented by Acura, is brought to you by the Muskoka Bay Club. Live, stay, and play at our award-winning championship golf course. Visit MuskokaBayResort.com today. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Sacchino and Bob Weeks.
Welcome to our Year in Review special as we break down 2017. Now, 2017, most of the Tiger talk was quiet. Is he going to play? When will he play? Is retirement coming in the future? How is he healing DUIs and back in the news for wrong reasons? And then a highlight of him as the assistant captain, as a popular guy in the dressing room at the President's Cup. And There was so much Tiger talk. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, he gets the green light as the doctors suggest he is cleared for full golf activity. And then in seemed to be, I don't know, it was almost overnight, now part of the field at the Hero World Challenge. Obviously, he is tied to this event. His foundation is tied to this event. This is at the Albany Club, which is owned by the Tavistock Group, which Tiger has been close to over the years, living at Isleworth, having an affiliation with the Albany Club, etc. Let's just start with this. Adam Scully, a few weeks ago, known as the Chris Angel Mind Freak now, suggested that Tiger would make his return at the Hero World Challenge. Bob, you were thinking more of the Florida swing in 2018, and I suggested I'm still not convinced he's going to play at all. Boy, was I wrong.
Were we all off, except for one guy.
Scully had it, so I'm not going to ask Scully this question. I'm going to ask you this question. How surprised were you when you got that, when you saw the announcement come out that I am in the field?
Yeah, I mean, if you go back, say, a month and take my temperature then, I'm very surprised it came this early. As we got closer and closer to the time when he did announce it, you know, you could see every week he was releasing another slow motion video of him, even including a club twirl. So it wasn't quite as shocking. And then when you put it in perspective, you know, from the time he announced it to the first tee, there's like a month there still, so he could get himself a little bit more in shape. And I think it makes sense in a lot of ways. A, it's four rounds. So he's going to play four rounds. He'll be able to take the temperature of how his body's healed. Two, it's a hit and giggle. It's more or less like a skins game. It's fun. There's no pressure on him. He doesn't have to worry too much. Three, it's his own tournament. It's his sponsor exemption he gave him to himself. So there's a lot of reasons why. I think the bigger question will be, what's the next tournament he plays?
All right. So I was going to ask you three questions. I'm going to ask you these three questions, and I'm going to go to Scully for the same three questions. Does he complete four rounds? Does he break 75, and where does he play next?
Yes, he play all four rounds. He looks to me fit, healthy, pain-free in the swings we've seen him. Yes, what was the second one?
Does he break 75
yeah.
At any point?
In one of the rounds, he will.
Okay.
In one of the rounds, he will. I don't think he'll break all four because I think there's still a little bit more going on with between the melon parts that needs mm-hmm. to get tournament ready. And I think the next time you will see him will be Bay Hill. That's what I'm going to guess.
No, that's a gap.
That's a gap, but I think a lot of it, he still says he wants to come back slowly. So I think that will be a smart move. He'll probably come back before that, but that would be my guess.
All right, Adam Scully, same question as you. I'm not going to ask you the question, are you surprised? Because you predicted this. So if you are surprised at your own prediction, that's even more shocking a moment. So I'm going to ask you the three questions. Will he complete four rounds of golf? Does he break 75? And where does he play next?
I think he will complete four rounds of golf. I think there will be one round of 75. Everything will be sub 75 other than that.
And three rounds sub 75.
Yeah.
Don't forget, he's Mind Freak.
Wow.
You know, Tiger and I are on this wavelength.
Yes. Yes. Chris Angel has nothing on Adam Scully.
Vulcan mind meld.
Although I'll answer your question, then pick up on what Bob said after. I think he's going to come back at Torrey next year. I think he's going to come back to a golf course that he knows. He did it last year as well and didn't fare too well playing with DJ and Jason Day. They were all just awful on that first day. I remember that very well. The one thing I hope Tiger doesn't do is come out with this very aggressive schedule and say, hey, I'm going to play for the next 5 weeks and just go out and fly halfway across the world and, you know, hurt your back again.
Right.
But one thing that we were all sort of surprised with at the President's Cup, sitting there in that news conference, my feeling was that we may never see Tiger again. It was the first time he's ever openly said, I'm not sure what my future holds. You know, when a reporter asked, you know, like, could you see the possibility of never playing professional golf again? He said, yeah, I really could.
Mm-hmm.
And to be hitting 60-yard wedge shots very straight with a chuckle. And then I think on the Tuesday or Wednesday after the President's Cup, he releases the slow-mo, the smooth iron shots, and then to quickly go to a driver and the stinger, of course. It all happened very quickly. For me, when I sort of, I guess, realized that the Hero was a definite possibility was when Hank Haney came out with his comments last week, that we recently played on Golf Talk Radio, where he says, I don't think he's going to play at the Hero. I know he's going to play at the Hero, which I thought was pretty interesting.
So you've got him at every round under 75, with the exception of one that is 75 on the button. You've got him completing four rounds of golf, and you have him playing next to Torrey Pines.
Yes.
I'm going to change my mind really quickly on the tournament he's going to come back at. It's going to be the Genesis Open, a.k.a. L.A.
L.A. and his event.
At his event. All right. Exactly. I forgot all about that.
I am going to... I'm going to obviously contradict everybody here because I'm so different on Tiger. And again, I would like to preface this by saying I hope I'm wrong.
You could still be right, you know, with your original prediction, because he might not play in 2018.
That's right. He's still not 2018. Yeah. Exactly. I'm going to suggest he does play all four rounds of golf. I think he completes the golf tournament. I think he breaks 75 once. I think he shoots between 75 and 79 twice. And I think we may see a round of golf if we get a windy day at Albany with an eight in front of it.
Ooh.
Okay? If we get a windy day. If we don't get wind, he'll shoot four rounds in the 70s, one of them sub 75. I expect a lot of 76, a lot of 77. If the wind kicks up, I think you could see an eight in front of it. Now, the one thing I have learned about Tiger over the years is he claims to be patient and take his time, yet his actions say something completely different. And I don't know if it's ego or if it's the desire to be competitive, as Bob outlined, that's all this guy knows. And it's he's a machine. He's a competitive golfer. He was built to be a pro golfer. So maybe it's all he knows. Or maybe it's a competition of both. I would like to see him return to the PGA Tour at the Honda Classic, which is basically the start of the Florida Swing. Why? Because it's warm. It's warm in the Bahamas at the Albany, and it is warm at the Honda Classic. And if you are still doubting your physical ability in any way, your back or things of that nature, heat helps. Warmth helps. 4 days in Palm Beach Gardens, sleeping in your own bed. That's a home game for him. The Honda Classic's down the street. I think that should be his return day. Then he could also play Bay Hill, and then he could also go to the Masters. He could have two tournaments in the heat before he gets to Augusta. That's what should happen. What is going to happen is what one of you two said. He's either going to show up at Torrey, or he's going to show up because of his foundation at Genesis. And let me tell you, I did L.A. last year in February for the Genesis. It was cold. It rained every day. It was damp. Let's talk about Marine Layer at San Diego for Torrey Pines in early morning tea times when you're pegging it up at 49 degrees Fahrenheit in a Marine Layer.
Usually long rough.
Long rough. Not good for your back. So what Tiger should do? Wait and play Honda, play Bay Hill, go to the Masters. What he will do is what one of you two said, and it's a mistake. Because if you're going to tweak something, you're going to tweak it in cold, damp weather. And that's what you're going to get at those events. So once again, I hope I'm wrong. I hope he does the smart thing and waits for a home game at Honda in the heat in his own bed and baby steps, walks before he can run. I hope that's it. But... sorry, boys. I think his ego is going to get in the way, and we're going to see him in the fog. Well, there's tons of... I wish we could just do an all-Tiger winter. I know Jeff McDonald, he's listening for sure. Our program manager at 1050, he wants an all-Tiger, 90 minutes all-Tiger all the time. Jeff, maybe we'll
all
do that
all winter.
Maybe we should have Jeff in for a winter show and do a Tiger show.
Sure.
And
I like that.
Yeah, he'd like that, I think.
Definitely.
And we can watch the two of us argue for 90 minutes. Be the three of you against me for 90 minutes. Well, there's so much to come from Golf Talk Canada, so much more year in review special. We'll be doing it throughout the winter. Lots to get to on Golf Talk Canada. Remember, first good decision on the golf course always starts in the closet.
This segment of GTC, presented by Acura, was brought to you by the Muskoka Bay Club. Live, stay, and play at our award-winning championship golf course. Visit MuskokaBayResort.com today. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Golf Talk Canada. For blogs, show archives, video highlights, and TV schedule, visit us online at GolfTalkCanada.ca.